Hello and welcome to Meet the Writers. My guest today is a Finnish-Estonian novelist and playwright. She's been dubbed a literary phenomenon. The winner of many awards, including the prestigious Finlandia Prize, she's known as the greatest voice of her generation at home and is rapidly gaining an equally deserved reputation abroad. Her 2003 debut novel, Stalin's Cows, put her on the map in Northern Europe, and her international breakthrough came with the publication of Purge. Translated into more than 50 languages, the book is also a play, a film, and an opera. Her fifth novel, Norma, concerns the global exploitation of women, told through the eyes of a woman with magical hair. This interview was recorded in the Kallio Library in Helsinki. Sophie, if we could just start off talking about your beginnings. So your father Finnish, but your mother from Estonia. So tell me about how her background fed into your childhood.
Well, at the time when I was born in 77, Estonia was part of Soviet Union. And in that way, that world was very different from Western Finland. So I was brought up between two different worlds, not only in two different cultures, but two different systems as well. Another one, dictatorship, another one, a free Western world.
So clearly what your mother had been through, and it doesn't sound like it was a particularly pleasant upbringing, or certainly from the perspective now of us growing up in the West. Do you think that it was something that impacted very negatively on her life?
Well, you have to remember that it was normal. So, and if you're brought up in a Soviet Union, then you don't have anything to compare with. But I had something to compare a Soviet Union with a Western system. So I guess that is something that definitely affected my belief in the word, or as Solzhenitsyn said it, words can break the cement. I think I wouldn't become an author anyway, but it made me more aware of the meaning of the words, because the Soviet Union was filled with propaganda. So in a way, in Finland, I learned the Finnish history at school, and the Estonian history I learned by listening. It was oral tradition, because everything that was printed was good old fake news. Fake news is not a new invention.
Your father was an electrician. Where do you think that the desire to write in you came from?
I think I had it always in me, because already before I learned to write, I wanted to create stories. I played with my friends and created the plays we were, you know, playing. So in that way, creating the worlds or narrative worlds was something very natural to me. But it's very difficult to say where it actually came from. I learned to write and read when I was six. I immediately wanted to have a diary. I have no idea why it felt so important, but I started to write in my diary, and it wasn't very much later when I understood that I wanted to become an author. We didn't have in the family authors or artists, but in Estonia, the culture was very highly valued. Authors were valued, books were valued. It was very important for Estonians to have a bookshelf at home. Of course, it was different compared to Finland in a way that every single book written in Estonian was already a treasure for an Estonian, because at the time, Soviet Union tried to limit the books printed in Estonian. There was always paper enough for Lenin's work, but not for Estonian authors. So in a way, I was brought up with the idea that bookshelves matter, books matter, and the stories matter. So in that way, that was something I was brought up with.
Is there a way that you would characterize Estonian literature?
Humor is one part of the Estonian literature. Probably this, because there's a tradition to it. Estonia has always been a country with a lot of rulers. I mean, there's always someone fighting about the country. Luckily, they don't have really too much natural resources, except for oil shale. That was one of the reasons why Germans wanted to stay there during the Second World War. So in a way, Estonians, who have lived there like always, but with the different rulers, they learned to fight the power with the humor. That's one way of surviving it, and I think that can be seen in literature as well.
And then we come to Finland, and of course we're seeing, I wouldn't call it an explosion of Finnish literature, but suddenly it's out there. We're seeing a lot more in translation, particularly led by you and your work. And we hear a lot of genre, names of genres thrown around. So for instance, it seems that people want to lump Finnish literature or any kind of crime or dark Finnish literature into the Scandi noir category. Is that something that you'd recognise?
Yeah, it's part of the marketing. I mean, publishers need to sell the books. But when I think about Scandi noir, then Finland is not actually part of it. Except perhaps Antti Tuomainen, he's translated crime author, but otherwise Finnish crime authors are not really translated too much. Most of the Scandi noir authors are Norwegians, like Unesbø, Swedish, like Stieg Larsson, or Danish. So in a way, Finland is not actually a crime country in that way. Mm. I'm sure Finland has kind of benefited from the interest in Scandinavian literature in general.
I'm hearing the phrase Finnish weird a lot. What would that mean to you?
It's a word that has been invented because we have such a strong tradition in realistic literature. I guess my latest novel, Norma, might be in a way part of it, as it has paranormal elements. But otherwise, Finnish literature is very realistic. So that is typical of Finnish literature, I'd say.
Of course, your own work stems a lot from history. How did that interest come about for you?
Okay, again, that is something that I've always been interested in history. One of the reasons might be that, again, difference between Estonia and Finland, architecture in Finland is very young. I was brought up in the middle of Finland in a small city called Jyväskylä, which is 100 years old. That means that there are not too many old buildings. And that's about the same in the whole country. Then compared to Estonia, in every single village, there's a middle-aged church. In every single village, there's a mansion. And my grandparents and Estonian family lived on the coast of Estonia next to an old bishop castle dating back to around year 1000. So in a way, that was a place where we used to play. So in a way, the history was present and visible in Estonia everywhere all the time. And of course, thanks to Soviet occupation, old buildings were not torn down. It was not because they wanted to protect them, but because there were so many, because of Stalin's transplantations, there were so many people coming to Soviet Estonia that they needed housing. There was a serious housing problem. For example, the population of Tallinn doubled in just a few years, and they didn't have accommodation for newcomers. So in that way, they needed to keep the old buildings as well. And that was totally opposite to Finland, because in Finland in the 70s, all the old buildings actually were, as much as possible, was torn down. So in that way, there was a huge difference between the understanding of time that was visible already to me as a child. So in that way, I'm sure that it made me somehow aware of the history in a way that it wouldn't have been possible if I'd been only stayed in Jyväskylä.
And you didn't stay there, you went to university. Yeah. Just give me that timeline between your study and then the publishing of your first novel.
Well, after the high school, I went to university and then also went to a theatre academy to study dramaturgy. Actually, I started to write my first novel then, which came out in Finland 2003, and I was 26 then. And that's when my career as a published author started.
How were you received then, and was it a surprise?
Oh, everything was a surprise because I was prepared for author's work, but in a little bit old-fashioned way, I think, because I had been reading biographies of dead authors, but not living authors, and that meant that I didn't, for example, understand that authors, for example, do interviews. So that was a kind of surprise to me that I was talking to journalists. That was I didn't understand that it's part of the job. So there were a lot of surprises in many ways.
So Stalin's Cows, tell me about the inspiration for that.
It's about Estonians in Finland, so in that way it's a migrant story. It's also about eating disorders, and Stalin's Cows, the title is referring actually to a Soviet anecdote. Estonians deported to Siberia, they started to call goats as Stalin's cows, because Stalin's propaganda was telling all the time that Soviet Union has the best cows in the world, and Estonians in Siberia, they didn't see cows, so they started to call goats Stalin's cows. That's one example of Estonian humor as well.
Mm-hmm. In your next book, Baby Jane, you take that a step further. You're talking now about gay experience, about lesbian couples, and in fact, that's led to you really being quite an outspoken person for gay rights.
Yeah, and that's about panic disorders as well. I've always had a sort of interest in mental disorders in literature, or let's say like Mad Woman in the Attic is always kind of part of my work, which is also about to come a motion picture. It's a sort of version of Whatever Happened to Baby Jane. In a way, it's a claustrophobic story about a sad love story as well. But at the time it came out in film in 2005, I felt that we need more books about gay people. When I was writing Stalin's Cows, I had the feeling that we need different characters more in Finnish literature because they didn't actually exist. And then, in a way, I am kind of always looking for characters in fiction that need more room, more space in fiction.
How difficult is it writing about things that you may have experienced or been close to, in any kind of sort of, as you talk about, panic attacks, perhaps eating disorders?
I mean, well, for example, I haven't ever had panic disorder, but all my friends have. I don't know, I seem to draw to people who have panic disorder. It's also one way for me to try to understand something and also try to find tools to cope with it. But also, because I believe that books can save the world, but it can actually save human lives. Experiences migrants have, or those who have eating disorders or panic disorders, or might be confused about their sexuality, they might find answers by reading stories about the same type of lives. So, and try to sort their own problems through actually reading books. So in that way, I find it very important. But in a way, writing hasn't ever been difficult to me. It has been probably the easiest thing in my life. So in a way, I don't think of a single subject or a theme that's difficult to write about. It probably would be more difficult not to write about it.
Mm-hmm. You've been unwittingly or not thrust into the spotlight really as a spokesperson, not just for Finland, but also for Estonia too. Is that a role that you're comfortable with?
Well, word is my tool, and I happen to be living in a country, if not the highest, then almost the highest level of freedom of speech. And if I'm not taking that opportunity to use my tool and use my sword, then that would be, I think that would be something I couldn't forgive myself. When I think about all my colleagues all over the world who are not sharing this luxury. I mean, this is a luxury if you can actually speak out. And it seems like that in many countries, freedom of speech is just shrinking and shrinking. So in that way, if we don't defend it, then we are going to lose it. And in a way, author's profession has always been a dangerous one. If it's not life-threatening, as it's not in Finland, then you should actually use your power to remind the people about the freedom of speech and also those who are not sharing this luxury.
Purge was a huge international breakthrough for you, but in fact that grew out of a play rather than a novel initially.
Yeah, I wasn't planning to write a novel. I got a commission from the Finnish National Theatre, and I wanted to write about sexual abuse as a war weapon, which was something I wanted to adapt on stage, because it's a very intimate experience, something that no man are willing to share in public. So I felt that it is actually something that should be shared in public with the audience. It needs a tool that makes it more visible. But after I was going through the final drafts of the play, when I understood that actually there are a lot of things I still would like to say, and then I decided to write the novel.
Mm-hmm. And the novel, of course, has gone on and on, not only being translated into, I think, over 50 languages, but also not only a play now, it's going forward into other mediums.
Well, a movie, an opera, all possible adaptations, I think.
When you talk about a play then being a means to get the work in front of more people or get more people to interact with it, surely that's quite limited in terms of audience size.
Well, theatre is a different kind of tool than a novel. Theatre can also react to time, what's happening at the moment. Then again, well, it takes also more time to write a novel. And, well, if you write a novel, then it will be the same text after 100 years. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, when you think about theatre, then theatre is kind of updating itself every night. So in that way, it's a different tool. And, of course, theatre is a live performance. Reading is a private experience. So in that way, they are different, require also different stories. But sometimes stories can be as strong on stage or in a novel form.
Mm. Purge, of course, looks at sexual exploitation.
Yes, or human trafficking as well. And trafficking I'm also dealing with my latest novel, Norma, even though the forms are different. Now it's hair trade.
I want to talk about Norma in some detail, but first, in 2012, you actually published a book not by you.
Yes, I have a company and a small publishing house, and I published Archipelago Gulag by Alexander Solzhenitsyn, alma mater of Gulag literature, in my opinion. And the reason for that is that by then it had been kind of a symbol of Finlandization in Finland, because it has a very strange publication history. To be precise, it wasn't published in Finland. I mean, it's a world classic and it should be available to Finnish readers as it is to most of the readers in the whole world. But it came out in the 70s. And in Finland, it wasn't published in Finland, but in Sweden, in Finnish. This was one way of, and a very good example of how tricky the political situation was in Finland. It was a huge revelation when the book came out first in France, and then the rest of the Western countries followed. But in Finland, publishers didn't dare to publish it. They were worried about its nature because they had been publishing Solzhenitsyn before, but Archipelago Gulag was documentary novel. It was not fiction. There were stories of eyewitnesses. And it was considered like this Soviet Union is going to go crazy if we publish it here. And also many publishers were worried about their own financing and things like that. So they decided to do a strange thing. And that was that a Finnish translator translated the book, smuggled the Finnish translation to Sweden, and a Swedish publishing house published it in Swedish. Then the books were brought to Finland and distributed. However, very many department stores and also libraries didn't want to have the book because it was considered anti-Soviet Union. And after that, nobody published the book. So in a way, it was not available anymore to Finnish readers. And it was kind of, I thought it was very strange that not a single Finnish publisher had wanted to publish the book. After that strange episode in Sweden, books were not available. The ones that were still, you know, you could find a book from old bookstore for a very high price because they were so rare. So I thought that I think we need to get it accessible to the whole nation.
In 2007, Putin declared Estonia an enemy state. I know that that's when your fourth novel, When the Doves Disappeared, you started thinking about that book. Again, looking at a very contentious period of history.
When the Doves Disappeared is focusing more on 40s and 60s in Estonia, in the shift between the Soviet and German occupations. Estonia was twice occupied by Soviet Union and once by Germans. But it's also a sort of anatomy of propaganda and how occupiers want to change the storytelling to their liking. And at the time, I had the feeling that this is absolutely something I need to do right now, because already before, that was already before war in Ukraine, war in Georgia, Estonia had been under several disinformation campaigns operated by Russia. Estonia was the country that, unfortunately, was just the first international hybrid war operation, which was 10 years ago already. Other countries didn't probably think at the time that it is something that is going to spread. So in a way, it was considered more like an Estonian matter. At the time, it was obvious that this is not going to be only Estonian matter. And I felt that it was very important to write about the tradition of propaganda in Soviet Union, even though, of course, I mean, when I say that, okay, I'm going to write about novel about tradition of propaganda in Soviet Union, it doesn't sound very appealing, you know, it's as such, but it is actually. And I wanted to write about those who actually wrote the history to Soviet Union. And before that, I had always said that I'm never going to have a person who is a writer in my novel, because that's kind of cheap, you know. I think author is lazy if you're having, you know, that profession in your book. But then again, when I started to think about that story, when the doves disappeared, I felt like this is actually, I want to have a writer in the novel, a writer who is writing propaganda, because, well, it's he's not an artist, even though he is, in a way, very, my character in the novel is very skillful in his work, but it's such a different kind of writing. But in a way, it's also a story about, feels even more up-to-date now, in my opinion, than it was actually when I wrote it.
And then your style changed completely. Norma is very, very different from everything you've ever written before, although stylistically I think we see the continuation. It's a fabulous book, and as you say, a bit kind of Finnish weird. There are the magical properties that Norma's hair has. But again, you're addressing issues of migration, of exploitation, human trafficking, the hair industry, and so on.
I did a lot of things I hadn't done before, and it was wonderful. I've been dealing with the human trafficking for a long time, so I had the feeling that I know about it. But then when I started to work on Norma and about the hair trade and the black or the dark secrets of the fertility industry, then I understood that actually my understanding of human trafficking was old-fashioned, and that there are several new fields of trafficking that are unregulated, and therefore we should talk about them more, because it's rather invisible.
I mean, it's an entertaining read. It's a book you can sit back and enjoy and all the rest of it. But there's much more to it. This is also a, if you like, a propaganda tool, to use that word.
Yeah, well, there's a manifesto, you can say it like that, or like one of the Swedish reviewers said that it's a feminist thriller, and that's fine by me. But I mean, I don't think about genre when I write. But I hope it's entertaining. I want to write in an entertaining way, because, of course, I don't want a reader to be bored, quite simply. And also, I think the impact on the reader is also stronger if story actually takes you. And of course, I mean, this is a story about unusual hair business as such. But then again, I've met quite a lot of, you know, male readers, for example, say, okay, it's about women's hair. What's it in it for me? And then I always say that, well, actually, you know, our hair is personal also to you. I mean, men are also using a lot of money on all kinds of hair products as well. So in that way, hair is always personal, and every single person has a personal experience of the hair. But hair is also, it's something that has been used as an eternal symbol for something, your status in a society. And when we think about how strongly every single society wants to control women's hair, it is quite impressive. And how strong, you know, passions in the hair discussion it's like, you know, involved with so strong feelings. So in that way, it also felt like hair is a kind of important thing to talk about in a way. But hair trade is something that is, it has exploded in just a few years. And we don't have enough information or the numbers about anything, actually. And I don't think when we think about trafficked hair and also when we think about fertility tourism, there are a lot of things we need to discuss more. And how hair and fertility are intertwined in the book, then, well, hair is quite simply the symbol for fertility. So, and they are also, both of these subject matters are also included in the subtext of the story, and that is the Rapunzel fairy tale, which, like most of the fairy tales, is also a fertility fairy tale.
What's next for you?
A new novel, of course, but in between two novels, I'm in a habit of writing for stage. So actually, I just finished a libretto for an opera, and it will be premiered actually in Covent Garden in 2020, I think.
Finally, you're obviously a very Finnish writer. You live here in Helsinki. Norma is set, in fact, exactly around where we're sitting, in the centre of Helsinki now. And yet you have this big voice on the international stage. Do you feel particularly rooted here? Are you a global citizen, to use that horrible word?
I'm a cosmopolitan. Yeah, you could say that, yeah, in a way. But, I mean, Finnish language is my writing language. In that way, I do want to live in an environment where I can hear it every day, because language is a very subtle tool. It changes every day. You can hear new expressions every single day. So that's one thing. But Helsinki is a good city to live in. I mean, it's small enough and big enough.
Very many thanks to my guest, Sophie Oksanen. Her latest novel, Norma, is published by Atlantic Books, and it's available now. You've been listening to Meet the Writers. Thanks to the production team of George McDonough and Amalia Ilkner, and to the Finnish Literature Exchange and the Kallio Library. You can download this show and previous episodes from our website or app, from SoundCloud, Mixcloud, or iTunes. I'm Georgina Godwin. Thank you for listening.